there, everybody. It is December the 29th, 2010, the last Wednesday in all of 2010, which means it's the last This Show Is So Gay of 2010, and that's what you're listening to. This show is so gay. I'm Ken, and it's very exciting. It's exciting to finish out 2010 with a brand new voice in the guest hosting chair. Hey, everybody. Welcome Julie to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Ken.
Tell everybody about Julie.
Oh, well, I was just telling you, it feels so funny to be hanging out in Brattleboro tonight because I'm usually coming and going. I used to live here for many, many years. Left and went to California, and now live
in... That's a whole nother state.
It's a whole nother country, believe me. It's a whole nother country. And now I'm in Northampton, which is its own lovely little place, but...
That's the gay capital of Western Massachusetts, I hear.
It is the gay capital, and so can I say that you and I work together?
Sure.
And people know where you work.
They know.
Yeah.
We're at Marlborough College, everybody. It's a tiny little school. You should go there.
Well, can I tell you one of the reasons I got there? I was working, this is gay related, so it's on topic.
I love gay related.
Okay. So I was working at a prep school where part of my compensation package was to be on campus housing. And when they found out I was a lesbian and had a partner, they did not get back to me for like 4 months. They finally came through with the housing, and my partner and I were literally packing boxes to go down there and move. I got a phone call from a friend who worked at Marlborough who said, look, we need a director of financial aid. Come up and talk to us. So I go up and I interview, and I'm talking to the president, and he says, so why are you looking? And I said, well, really, I'm not looking. You guys called me, but I'm finding that the atmosphere is very homophobic. You know, I told him the story about what happened with the housing, and he looked at me, and then he stopped himself. And then he looked and he said, I can't believe, you know, in this day and age that people are homophobic. My wife and I joke that we want our daughters to grow up to be lesbians so we don't have to deal with boys. And I thought, I can work here. This is going to work for me.
And you took the job.
And I took the job.
Now, financial aid, there are a lot of gay scholarships out there, are there not?
There are gay scholarships.
I think students really, there are a lot of students who are struggling to find ways to pay for school. And that's one way that I know a lot of LGBT students have not fully explored.
There are scholarships, but when it comes to private schools like Marlborough, never let money be an issue because students have no idea and parents have no idea how much financial aid is out there. It's what I wish I had known when I was younger. There is so much money to help students from every means go to school. So students should find the schools that they're passionate about, apply to them, and then see what all the financial aid packages look like and make
school
up their minds.
School first. All right. Well, and how gay are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling pretty darn gay.
The correct answer is so gay.
I'm feeling so gay.
Oh, I got to do your training program. Oh, I haven't done your training
program. On the job training? I love
this. Here we go. So when I point at you with my right hand, you say, oh, Ken, I never thought of it that way.
Oh, Ken, I never thought of it that way.
And then when I point at you with my left hand, you say, oh, Ken, you witty devil, or some variation
of
that.
Okay, I think I could do that. Okay, Ken, you are so witty. You were doing it. I was just practicing.
This is good. So it will come up later. Mm-hmm. It'll come up later. Okay. All right. So it is indeed the last This Show Is So Gay of 2010. And all the websites, it's actually not the most happening gay news week because all the websites are doing wrap-ups of the whole year. So what I thought was interesting, theadvocate.com did their 10 most read gay stories of the year.
Ah.
So not necessarily the 10 watershed moments in LGBT life for the year, but there are 10 most read gay stories.
I thought this was like a most blue or a most read.
Oh, no. R-E-A-D.
We could do
what
that.
What do you think hit the list?
Maybe Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Nowhere on the list.
Get out.
It was not one of the 10 most read stories of the
because
year.
Because it happened so late.
It might be. Oh, but it's been all year. Yeah, I was surprised, though, that it didn't hit anywhere on there. But of the 10, 5 of the 10 are education stories.
Tell me.
Which I thought was interesting. Number 10 was about the Rutgers case, the Rutgers suicide. Yeah. So that was at number 10. Number 9 was not an education case, but it was apparently a story I missed. The headline was B. Arthur's truck driving Marine passed. Anyway, just kind of missed that whole thing. At number 6 were the two lesbian students who were stopped from graduating from their private school.
Right.
What were the other education ones? Number 4, Marquette, which is a Jesuit school out in Wisconsin, I want to say, was when the Marquette students rally for a professor of theirs that was very much shunned by the administration. Hmm. Number 3, not education, but I guess I missed when Fran Drescher said that her ex-husband is gay.
I missed that.
The number three most read story of
obviously
the year.
Not in Vermont.
Number two was the one from just last month, the school official who mm-hmm. wrote on his Facebook page that he wanted all the gays to kill themselves.
Right.
And number one was Constance McMillan, the student who wasn't allowed to go to her prom, wasn't right. allowed to go with another female, was the story when she was sent to the fake prom
mm-hmm.
by all the other students and the parents, which I thought was one of the classier moments of the year. Mm-hmm. And with that, see, the police are not happy about that story. This is the exciting thing about community radio. So we have a very exciting show for everybody tonight. We have a very special guest. We do this once a year. We'll tell you about it in a few. And this very special guest has requested some music. I feel you like this song, Julie. I'm calling it already that you like this song. And away we go.
And think of you caught up in circles. Confusion is nothing new. Flashback, long nights almost left behind. Suitcase of memories, time after. Sometimes you picture me, I'm walking too far ahead. You're calling to me, I can't hear what you said. You say, go slow, and I fall behind. The second hand unwinds. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time. If you fall, I will catch you. I'll be waiting. Time after time. If you're lost, you can look and you will find me. Time after time. I will catch you.
Was I right? You like that one.
I love that song.
Love that one. Cyndi Lauper singing that one with Sarah McLachlan. Our guest requested Time After Time, and I looked on, I was just telling Julie, I looked on my iPod and I had 12 versions of Time After Time. So there was a lot to choose from. And I went with that one off of the Body Acoustic with Sarah McLachlan. Mm. Down in North Carolina, this was just the other day. Have you been to North Carolina?
Just traveling through.
Yeah, I've never been through. An anti-gay commissioner in North Carolina's Mecklenburg County called gay people, quote, sexual predators. In an email response to a letter from a fellow commissioner asking her colleagues to sign a thank you note to the state officials who voted to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Mecklenburg County Commissioner Jennifer Roberts circulated the letter earlier this month, prompting an angry response from Bill James. He said in his response, quote, homosexuals are sexual predators. Allowing homosexuals to serve in the U.S. military with the endorsement of the Mecklenburg County Commission ignores a host of serious problems related to maintaining U.S. military readiness and effectiveness, not the least of which is the current Democrat plan to allow homosexuals to share showers. It always comes back to the showers. It's such a short line from homosexuals to the showers, to share showers with those they are attracted to.
If they're not brave enough to be seen in the showers, how can we trust them in the trenches?
Apparently, he's worried about the showers, though. So the question is whether he's going to come out with an apology. That's something we talk about quite a bit on the show, is apologies, because it seems that every other day someone's apologizing for something or other related to their anti-gay comments. Mm-hmm. What do you, Julie, think that Bill James this commissioner in North Carolina's Mecklenburg County, what kind of apology could he give that would satisfy you?
Wow, that's such a good question. And I'm sure the thought of an apology wouldn't even occur to him.
No.
I would think he would have to be forced to apologize.
He's watching the showers. He doesn't have time to apologize.
Right, right. I mean, I think he's been listening to John McCain. Didn't John McCain say something about this?
It was the best.
You watched
Did you
that.
Watch C-SPAN the whole day?
I was riveted the whole day. I should have been shopping and wrapping. But no, I was glued to the TV set. And when he was talking about how people who support the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell – they don't know if you're gay, you can't know people in the military.
Yeah.
I mean, where do these people get their information?
I love it because he really, I talked about this a little bit last week. He got up there and he said, now I don't know what the procedure was. I think they had said, okay, Senator Lieberman, you can say a minute because it was just quick snippets right before they voted.
Right.
And so Joe Lieberman said, this is great and people are brave and people should vote for this. And then John McCain made his comment about how there are Marines without legs because they were distracted. And if we let the gays serve openly, there will be more Marines without legs.
Right.
In the showers. I'm just going to add in the showers because I assume that it has something to do with the showering.
The thing that I loved about listening to him that day was it was so clear that he knew he'd lost.
Yes.
So all he could do is, you know, sort of spew the usual and say, and we're going to repeal this.
Yeah. Well, it's what I do, though. When I know that I'm fighting a losing battle, I go immediately to Marines without legs. It's kind of a strategy of mine. I feel that, yes, I just lost the argument, but I was able to get that imagery out there, and that's a victory.
You know, I'm so glad I'm here tonight because now I've learned something. I've learned something that I can try.
If you're in a meeting, folks, see, this show is so gay is not just about covering the gay news. It's also giving you life strategies. If you are in a meeting and it's not going well for you and you see that you're going to be outvoted or your boss is going to say you have to do this, there's always a way to invoke Marines without legs.
Legless Marines.
Yeah. It's a way to go.
Yeah, they're starving in Africa.
It could change the tide. There was a poll out there this week. The poll question was, what lesson, and it says Julie, which is weird. What lesson, Julie, always says the name of the co-host. What lesson, Julie, did you draw from the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell? Here are your choices. There are five choices.
Okay.
Choice one, change is possible if you work hard and never give up. Choice two, politics isn't as easy as it looks. Choice three, the fight is worth it no matter how long it takes. Choice four, all of these answers. Or choice five, none of these answers. Or choice six, legless Marines.
I like one and three. I mean, I suppose you could throw two in there too. But, you know, I really thought Don't Ask, Don't Tell was dead in the water when it did not go when they voted down the whole defense package.
Yes, the authorization bill,
I thought the only way this is going to go through is if it's part of something else.
And
really
then
big.
They went out on their own.
And I could not have been more wrong. I mean, did you expect this?
I was surprised. And I have to say, I've been saying for probably a few years now that this is not my issue du jour. Mm-hmm. It's not. Sure, I want gay people to be able to serve openly, but it's not. If I ranked my top five issues, it's not even in the top five. It's just not something that I'm out there with a sign rallying the troops.
Right.
Oh, look at that. Right. But then I just found myself in the past couple of weeks really getting into it. And so I was extraordinarily pleased. I was extraordinarily pleased. Well, I feel that you got the correct answer, or you went with the majority, both the plurality and the majority, all of the answers. 63% said all of the answers. 18% said change is possible if you work hard enough. 11% said the fight is worth it. 5% said politics isn't as easy as it looks. And 2% said none of the answers. And I'm going to again call that the legless Marine vote. So yay for Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah.
It certainly goes out on quite the high note.
Huge high note.
He's got some political capital now, it seems.
Absolutely.
Now, what is your happiness level or frustration level with President Obama?
I was hoping
on behalf of the LGBT community.
I was hoping you were going to ask that. But
which,
you know,
means it's a guarantee. If you hope that I don't ask something, it's almost a guarantee that it comes up on the air. So,
well, you know, I have to tell you, I was in November. I was pretty done with Obama.
Okay.
I was just really, really disheartened, I guess.
Yeah.
And I have to say that the lame duck Congress really turned me around. I was really tuned into what was going on. And I feel like he was just sitting back and really orchestrating. He was working the phones. He was working the politics in this one. And what I loved was not only did, you know, there were larger things at work here. You know, that bill that we all hated about the taxes.
Yes.
I mean, I was just like, oh, he sold out. I think he was master dealing other issues as part of that. And I think the pivotal thing for me was not only was this a huge campaign promise being delivered on, but when he was asked about his thoughts about gay marriage, did you hear that?
Did he equivocate a little bit or did he say no?
Well, not what I heard.
Okay.
What he said was that in the past he has supported, you know, civil unions or something equivalent, and that he did not believe that gays needed marriage, but he had many close friends who were gay who really want this and believe that they need it. And he spoke very eloquently, more eloquently than I am right now, about how his thinking is evolving on this issue. And it was it was courageous. It did not feel politically driven. It felt like it was coming from the heart.
And a lot of the articles now are pointing towards, okay, well, that's next. This has got to be next. So we put off marriage as long as we could to really just press the president, and that's going to be the next issue. And then Joe Biden came out this week, not of the closet, but he came out in a press conference and said, it's kind of a funny word, he said the gay marriage is inevitable, which is great. Mm-hmm. I want that to be inevitable.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear them talking in those terms. And I agree. I think that is the next big issue. I mean, it has been. You know, if you're following Prop 8 and what's going on in California. And
were you in California for Prop 8?
I was in California when it passed.
Wow.
Or not when Prop 8 passed, but when gay marriage passed in
2004. Were. Okay.
So I was there.
That was celebratory.
That was very celebratory. And it was sort of on the heels of Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
So it was like the win-win. But very sad when they pulled the plug.
Right.
Yeah.
Which they very effectively did. So hopefully, you know, everything's going to work out there. All right, we are going to do, that's kind of a dance version of a guest-requested song, and then we're going to welcome a guest. So enjoy.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be. Everybody's searching for a hero. People need someone to look up to. I never found anyone who fulfilled my needs. A lonely place to be. And so I learned to depend on me. Let the children's laughter
Haven't heard that one in a while, have you?
I know I have
and
not.
And that version. All right, it's time to welcome a guest. Hey, guest, are you there?
Hey, Cam.
Oh, good. Okay, let me introduce you. For the past 3 years, This Show Is So Gay has donated a Guest for a Show prize to an auction benefiting the National Association of Student Personnel Administrators. A bidding war ensues, elbows are thrown, thousands of dollars, just go with me here, get slammed down on the table for this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, all culminating in this show where we welcome he who has stood atop the auction mountain, arms raised triumphantly in the air. Gregory Adam Jones is the Assistant Director for Operations and Off-Campus Housing at Brandeis University, having previously served as their Coordinator of Residential Operations. He was a presenter and founder of LGBTQA Out, an ally training program for Brandeis students, faculty, and staff. He was a trainer for Straight But Not Narrow at Northwestern University, which educated students in traditionally unaccepting settings on tolerance, heterosexism, coming out, and sensitivity issues. He's done presentations entitled Creating Safe Spaces, A Journey, and Gender Neutral Housing at various conferences. Gregory Adam Jones, winning bidder of the 2010 NASPA auction. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks, Kat. Thanks for having me.
Say hi to Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, Greg.
How you feeling?
I'm a little bit stuffed up right now. It's one of these winter colds. But other than that, I'm feeling great.
Awesome.
And everything's going well.
Now, why did you bid on this prize?
Oh, I just couldn't resist the opportunity. it was for a good cause. I've been active in NASPA for a few years now, and I always try and get something while I'm there and donate some money while I'm at it. And this was just great, and I'm just happy to be able to be on the air with you now.
And it was like $6,000 that you paid for this. So, but that's great. Greg. Thank you.
It was a gift to myself and a gift to the organization. I would like to think that it's because I have this large pool of money that I'm just throwing away
yes.
for anything and everything.
Oh yeah. Well, as a gay man, you do have a higher disposable income. I believe I've read studies about that.
I think that's true. That's what gay men, we're just supposed to be, buying everything that we can. It's all about, luxury and bling and
exactly
things that we can get.
All right, great. Thanks for being on the show, Greg. That message brought to you. No, I'm just kidding. So, Greg, because I ask, you are the third NASPA auction winner of this prize, and I will ask you what I've asked the previous two. Greg, what does student affairs mean to you?
What does student affairs mean to me?
Let's pretend this is a job interview and you're trying to get the job of co-host. Here we go, Greg.
And you don't have a cold.
affairs, to me, it's all about helping students through difficult times. It's about being able to be a mentor. It's about, it's really about service. It's about helping out when needed. It's about guiding students through, for a lot of people, a tough time or a difficult time. Helping students discover who they are, what they're passionate about. It's about how to live. When you're talking about residence halls, how to live with people, because most 18-year-olds these days don't know how to do that.
Right.
So a lot of it is just, teaching them sort of like those basic life skills that, we like to acquire and really helping them, develop as their own and into who they are.
And what was that light bulb moment for you? When did you get the calling?
When did I get the calling? Probably when I was a senior, I would say, and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And someone said, "Well, why don't you just keep doing this?" And I was like, "Okay, sure." It seemed natural for me then. I did a lot of work when I was an undergrad, working with new students and underclassmen, and I really enjoyed that. So I said, "Hey, if I can do this for a living, why not?"
There you go.
So I've been doing it, really, I guess, ever since.
It's like a whole career.
Yeah, could say that it is.
I would hope so. Now, how was it coming out to your family as a student affairs professional?
Well, it's been hard for them.
Yeah, I would imagine.
As with any, tough decision like this, they've accepted it, though, and they're supportive.
Oh, good.
Every now and then, my mom says, "Have you taken the LSAT? Have you thought about law school?"
Yeah.
You'd be a great lawyer, and every now and then, I hear that, but I say, no, I think I'm pretty good where I am now.
Okay. There should be a peace sag some sort of parents and friends of PFASAG, of student affairs people. So let's talk about some of your work, Greg.
Greg, I was wondering about the gender neutral housing. Like, is that something that you sort of heard about that was happening in your profession and you thought that would be good to do at your school? Or was that something that sort of came as a need that you saw the students asking for?
A little bit of both. There were definitely a lot of students at Brandeis, which has a very strong commitment to social justice and equality, who are really championing gender-neutral housing for a few years, even before I got there. There was a student organization that was for advocating for transgender students, the transgender issues, that were really pushing it as well. And it just seemed to really fit naturally with what Brandeis is all about and what the students were asking for. And to me, it made total sense, too. We've seen it at a lot of colleges now. A lot of schools are creating gender-neutral housing options and opportunities. So it really just fit well, and we went within the school. It's very supportive all the way from the top down, and it's been great, you know, working with that. And it was a great project that I really wanted to do when I got there, too. And I was really happy to have that opportunity to really see it work and function well.
So how does that tie into how you do the housing assignments? Like, you just don't look at gender at all?
Pretty much. Brandeis, it's an interesting place because for those who've never heard of Brandeis, we are a small Research One institution with a liberal arts focus outside of Boston. And one of the core principles of Brandeis is non-sectarian Jewish sponsorship. So there's very strong connections to the American Jewish community, but it's not technically religiously affiliated.
It's my people. It's my people, Greg.
Exactly. Hey, my people too.
There you go.
So part of Brandeis culture is that there's always a request to have gendered spaces because a lot of students, because of their, if they have strong Orthodox or conservative religious backgrounds, will want that single gender housing. But then a lot of students who come to Brandeis because of the social justice and sort of the liberal student body really push for having that gender-neutral housing option as well. So when we assign housing, we do have areas that are mixed-gendered and then areas that are single-gendered, and the single-gender is either male or female, and then the mixed-gendered, we can say whoever wants to live there for upperclassmen can live there.
Now, this is a question that wouldn't have come up 10 years ago, but what genders do you recognize and how do you track them?
Well, we don't track them. We recognize all gender expressions, all gender identities. However anyone identifies themselves, we are, you know, try and be as supportive as we can. The difficult part is always with new students.
Right.
A lot of students, we don't have right now a good way to house students coming in a gender-neutral option. There's other schools that have tried that, and I don't think anyone has really had a successful way of fairly housing new students with a gender-neutral option. But that's something that we're always looking at, too, and always trying to work on and see what sort of solutions we can come up with.
It's the same exact thing at Marlborough College. We have it down pat for sophomores, juniors, and seniors, but first years we haven't quite cracked that nut. We haven't figured that out yet. So what were the issues this year for LGBT students at Brandeis? Where was the drama, Greg?
Where was the drama? Well, I mean, there's always drama.
I know. We love it.
This is a gay show.
It's a gay show.
Exactly. I mean, you can't have a gay show without drama. Mm-hmm. You can't have a university without drama. To be honest, I think this year nothing has come up that I thought was really LGBT specific at Brandeis. Nothing that jumps to the top of my head anyways. I mean, I'm sure there's always something, and in the student world, there's always, you know, some drama about something going on. But, you know, for the most part, I think the issues that we had, anything that came up this semester was pretty universal. I don't think there was anything that, you know, was specific to the LGBT student population.
Was there any movement around the bullying on campus? How did Brandeis address the rash of suicides?
There was definitely action and an activity on campus around that. There were several vigils that were held. There's one that they did where I think over 100 people showed up, from what I heard.
So, fantastic.
That was pretty successful in sort of bringing the community get together and get people talking about it. you know, there was definitely a lot of discussions, and there was definitely a lot of awareness, I think, on campus about it. You know, Brandeis is a school that we do, you know, have a sort of a no-tolerance policy towards bullying of any sort. So it was something that, you know, we were very, you know, strongly supportive of the students in there and coming together and talking about bullying and how that might appear on campus, too.
Do you find, do they get involved? Part of my struggle has always been to connect students to some larger issues that, you know, that was kind of an easy one. It was an easy buy-in because students were really concerned about bullying. And I've always had to be really careful in not pushing issues that students just, that they just don't resonate with. And one of them is marriage and recognizing marriage rights. And don't ask, don't tell. I found that not a lot of students, because I tend to work at small liberal arts colleges where ROTC folks are not even allowed to come onto campus to recruit. So don't ask, don't tell or not. So I find myself always having to check myself and saying, all right, that's, you know, that's an issue that you care about. That's not an issue that the students care about. Have you seen any movement on that with your student?
Yeah. I mean, Brandeis is a pretty active when it comes to politics and political activism and issues in terms of, you know, someone's always talking about something, or there's always a student that's interested in every issue, but whether there's a large group of students that are interested in all these issues is always a little unclear. There was some, I guess, some stuff on campus this year with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There were, every semester, the LGBT student group has a dance, and this year their theme was had a military theme for their dance, and they also do it on Halloween. So you can only imagine what what happened.
I'm sitting here imagining that right now.
what that would look like.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually what I was going to ask about was what is the sort of, you know, gay, lesbian, transgender culture? What's the queer culture like at Brandeis, and what kinds of things were going on this year socially or?
Well, someone who works at Brandeis has used this line before, that being at Brandeis is kind of like being at a Bette Midler concert, because everyone's either gay or Jewish or both.
Oh, my God, I want to go right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's sort of what the culture's like. You know, it's a very accepting campus. It's a very open campus, too. It's an active campus. The LGBT student group is, you know, it's one organization, but the way they're run is they have about seven different branches, and each branch does something different, from, you know, political activism to having a group that talks about, like, sex and sexuality studies, mm-hmm. sort of the academic focus, and then there's a separate LGBT Jewish group, and there's an LGBT students of color group, and a political activism, and then social, so they're all part of sort of the same organization. And each one kind of does their own different thing. And you know, some students find themselves drawn to the organization involved in it, and then there are a lot of students who say, no, this isn't for me, and they're, you know, on campus, they're not necessarily involved with the LGBT group, but, you know, they're still on campus and part of the community, and, you know, still, you know, go to the functions and things like that. So it's a pretty active group. It's a very accepting campus. It's a great place to be gay. It's a great place to be gay and work there, too. You know, especially in residence life, we're definitely not short on gay people there. I like to say that at Brandeis, you know, the only office that might be gayer than our office is the mailroom. and you kind of have to see it to understand, but...
Oh, we got to get pictures of that. Right. We got to get a picture.
Yeah, I'll go down and send you some pictures. We actually, we have a singing mailman. You can check him out on YouTube.
God, we have to get one of those.
You have to send the link.
Yes, we have to get one of those. Well, I've talked about this quite a bit on the show before, just about how I'm probably spoiled rotten, because being a gay man working in student affairs, because student affairs to me feels disproportionately gay friendly, but I've also only worked at institutions in New York City and Vermont, so there's a bit of a bias there. How accepting of a field have you found student affairs, not just at Brandeis, but student affairs as a field to be for you as a gay man?
You know, I've always thought that it's a very accepting field. Pretty much everywhere I've been, student affairs, even in when I've been to areas that aren't necessarily as accepting, either geographically or culturally, that the student affairs division, though, ends up being the place where it is accepting and where it is supportive no matter what. Not No, not to say that everyone in student affairs is the most supporting people, because I have, you know, being at some of these conferences every now and then, you know, I have met someone who kind of rubs me the wrong way of being like, you know, are you sure you're in the right field sort of thing? Like, just the way that they act or behave or have talked about gay issues.
That was me. You're talking about me, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly.
It was me.
And it's all about you.
I know.
every now and then, you know, you do meet someone in the field where it's like, well, maybe, you know, they don't seem like they get it. They don't necessarily understand gay issues or gay experiences or the role of gay people in student affairs. But I think as a whole, it's, you know, I'd say 95% of student affairs everywhere I've been has always been accepting and a great field to work into.
Nice. Nice. Well, it is vacation time for you, is it not?
It is.
And Julie, vacation as well?
Well...
Oh, no, you kind of went to work today.
I went to work today, yeah. I could be on vacation, but I chose not to.
Well, there was this vacation story that I wanted to throw out to the two of you. There is a luxury hotel that is set to open next month in Mexico that is going to cater exclusively to gay men.
Now, you know, I have to take exception to this because I heard that Mexico is just a boon for gay travelers. What about all the murders? I mean, everyone else is staying away. So they're like trying to find a new angle to...
I'm telling you, they said, this is quote, the hotel is uniquely for men. That is to say, only homosexual couples are accepted. It's not for women. Although among our personnel, we have heterosexual men and women and all have received specialized training, which I would love to know what that is, to avoid having our guests feel uncomfortable or discriminated against. So we'll start with you, Greg. Would you prefer... to go to a luxury hotel that caters exclusively for gay men, or do you want some of those other people there as well?
I don't know if I really care. I mean, it's a luxury hotel.
You're just about the luxury. That was the correct answer. Very good, Greg. Julie, well, let's change it to that there. It's only for lesbians. Would you prefer it?
Well, I mean, I think I prefer it if it's for gay men and lesbians.
I agree.
You know, I think it'd be nice to have both.
Yeah. Have you ever done the cruises, Julie?
I'm not a cruise person. And after all of the problems they've had with the boats lately, I'm really glad.
Just
like I'm glad
off.
I was not on an airplane or needing to be on an airplane this past week.
Greg, have you done a gay vacation?
I mean, I've gone on vacation with my partner, so that's pretty gay.
That's pretty gay.
we've never done a themed gay vacation or gone to a specific, you know, gay resorts or you know, specifically to be with the gays and in the gay area. You know, I've heard of these, you know, of some hotels, some establishments that I have not been to, but, you know, these particular, I have a cousin that told me about a place in Key West where it's customary that you may leave your door unlocked at night. And maybe that's what this, you know, luxury hotel is going for that sort of place where, you know, if you want to leave your door unlocked, if you want to, you know, do whatever you can, that's fine. And
yeah, Greg, my mom listens to this show, and we have no idea what we're talking about. I'm sweet, innocent, and pure, and we, I don't know what you mean.
Well, after my last comment, so I have to say I'm thrilled that they are opening this. I mean, I hope they get a lot of business.
Yeah.
As somebody who, over the years, has been to many, you know, gay and lesbian oriented resorts and places to stay when I've been on vacation. It makes a difference. Even going to Provincetown and not staying at a, you know, staying at a place that was sort of like more traditional, more family oriented, I really felt the difference.
I've never been to Provincetown.
You're kidding.
I know. Greg, you've been there. No, I've never been
there. Are you kidding me?
No, I've never been. Let's go right now.
You're from New York and you've never been to P-Town?
No, because I lived in the West Village. It was P-Town every day. What do I need P-Town? You've been to P-Town, Greg, correct?
Of course.
Of course.
Have you been to a Gunquit?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh. I have not been to a Gunquit. That's still on my list.
A Gunquit in Maine.
That's north of here, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
It's not north.
This is north enough.
East.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I'm north enough. I don't need more directions. I'm in Vermont, people.
Right.
Let's settle for that. Yeah, no, in a couple of weeks, every year we do a show with Mariah Hansen. And so I just booked her for February, and she organizes the Dinah, which is the big lesbian cruise. And every year I talk about, gosh, I think I would go crazy. First of all, I don't like cruises because I don't accept boats as a form of transportation. Mm-hmm. But I think I would go a little stir crazy on a boat. But yes, I have, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of a gay vacation. I've never done it.
You've never done it.
I've not. No, I mean, yes, I've gone away with gay friends.
Right.
And certainly, when my partner and I go on a trip, it's pretty gay.
Oh, honey, you're going to P-Town.
Greg, will you meet us in P-Town?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Name the weekend. I'm going to say Memorial Day weekend, though. That's usually the lesbian weekend.
What's wrong with that?
I love lesbians. I want to leave the weekend to the lesbians. I don't want to encroach.
What do you mean, name the weekend? I'm talking about, like, tomorrow at 10.
Right.
So we'll see you there. We got to talk about your musical selections, Greg.
Sure.
Okay. So this is the part of the show, Greg, where you tell our listening audience, you get to lay down on the couch and psychoanalyze yourself. You are going to tell our listening audiences what these musical selections say about Gregory Adam Jones. Are you prepared?
Okay.
What does Cyndi Lauper's Time After Time say about Greg?
Well, Time After Time, I chose that song because it's kind of a song that's important to my partner and I. It's kind of sappy.
That's
but,
okay.
We discovered once, I guess, when we first were getting to know each other, you know, back in the early days of our relationship, that it was a song that just kind of spoke to both of us. So it's my sentimental, sappy side.
Okay.
And it's Cyndi Lauper. She's, you know, one of our great divas, so
she is.
We have to give respect to Cyndi.
And from that diva to the Whitney diva, what does Greatest Love of All say about Greg?
It's about discovering yourself and being finding that love for yourself. And I guess I really just love myself a lot.
Nice!
Or I just love my sappiness. Or I really believe that the children are the future.
Aren't they?
That's sweet.
This is good. This is like a job interview. You're getting the job.
Yeah.
You're doing very well. All right, I'm only going to make you do one more because this one is probably the most intriguing on the list. What does the Scissor Sisters' Skin Tight say about Greg?
And this is a family show.
Scissor Sisters, I love them. I think they're great. And they're not out there enough, as in not enough people listen to them. So that was part of one reason I wanted to make sure a Scissor Sisters song was on there. And I think Skin Tight's just a great song overall. What it says about me, I guess maybe I'm a little tight right now. I don't know. But
I'm not sure what to do with that, little, Greg.
We won't ask you to define tight.
Okay, there you go. Greg, that concludes the interview. You've done very well.
Thank you.
Do you still feel so gay?
I feel incredibly gay right now.
Yay! See, it's like we have that effect on people. Well, Greg, we thank you so much for bidding on us. I feel like you won me at an auction. That's a resume builder, by the way.
Yeah.
You're now a radio personality.
Nice. There you go. Well, Greg, thank you for all that you do. I love doing this once a year just because student affairs is kind of this field that everybody knows about, but they don't really know about it. There are actual professionals who work in this field, as it turns out. And I truly believe it is some of the most important work that goes on out there. So, Greg, on behalf of your students, on behalf of Brandeis, on behalf of Julie and I and the gay community, thank you, sir, for all of the work that you do for your students.
You're welcome, Ken. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg.
Bye, Greg.
All right. Bye.
All the best.
Skin Tight by the Scissor Sisters. I don't know their stuff that well.
Me neither.
I want to. My new obsession is Robin. Do you know Robin?
I don't know Robin.
Oh my gosh. She really gets me moving on that treadmill. I love her. She's dancing on her own. I'm dancing on my own. It's fantastic.
Did you play her last week?
Did I play Robin last week?
Is that the one your dad likes?
No. My dad likes the Shakira song.
Yes, that's what it was.
About Africa.
Right.
Waka Waka.
Right.
It's brilliant. It's quite brilliant. So a couple other stories that hit the news this week. And again, it was a slow news week, but there was some interesting stuff that happened. So do you know Richard Chamberlain? Richard Chamberlain is an actor who...
Familiar name.
Yeah, he was Dr. Kildare.
Right.
In the 60s drama Dr. Kildare.
Right.
He was the Dashing title character. That's what they call him. And then he was also in Thornbirds, which I know about Thornbirds, but I didn't...
You're too young.
I'm sorry. I was six. It was 1983. I didn't know Thornbirds. So he was in Thornbirds, and now he's on Brothers and Sisters, and he came out of the closet... Not that long ago.
Good like for him.
Yeah, he came out of the closet not that long ago. But the drama is that he said in a recent interview that actors should not come out of the closet.
Why?
This is what he said. So now he's... now.
Did he miss the Ellen episode?
I have to tread a little carefully here because I certainly don't want to come across as ageist. But he is 76 right now. So, and he came out, he came out in 2003. So he was 69 when he came out. And he said, quote, "There's still a tremendous amount of homophobia in our culture. For an actor to be working is kind of a miracle. So it's just silly for a working actor to say, oh, I don't care if anybody knows I'm gay, especially if you're a leading man." And then he goes right into saying, "Look at what happened in California with Proposition 8. Please don't pretend that we're suddenly all wonderfully, blissfully accepted." And then the writer of this article, I think this is over on Entertainment Weekly, said, quote, "The sad truth is I can count the number of out A-list leading men on one hand. Does that mean there's no room in Hollywood for out gay actors?"
Well, you know, it's an interesting point that he brings up about the difference between just sort of being an actor and trying to be a leading actor.
Being a leading man.
You were talking about Kevin Spacey recently and how disappointed we are that... Yeah,
it's so tough because I go back and I started talking about that last week with Ann Northrup, and we talked about it just for a minute or two. And I've been thinking about it a lot about Kevin Spacey because I am so frustrated because I've never slept with Kevin Spacey. And that's usually my way of determining if someone's gay. Either they come out or they sleep with me. And so it's a litmus test. And so... Hi, Mom. And
I like
it. but you know what I mean? Like, I'm not the person who's going to go around saying, oh, I heard that person's gay and he's gay, and I'm going to say it on this gay radio show that goes out to the whole world. So
right.
I don't want to say that about Kevin Spacey. Sure, I have a number of friends who've said, oh, yeah, I've seen him out at the gay clubs,
right.
But I don't know that to be true. So, and I've never slept with him, and he's never come out.
Mm-hmm.
So I do not know definitively that he's gay. So let's put that in that box right there. That said,
it also seems like a generational thing.
It could be a generational
thing. You know? And sort of a, I think it's still a passe attitude and a disappointing one.
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone came out.
Oh, it'd be fantastic.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it would, you know, I think this 10% is such an underestimate.
Right.
Of what's really going on in reality. And I think, you know, with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, people were talking about, oh, the 14,000 people who've been discharged. Hello, honey. Let's talk about the thousands and thousands of people who never came out, never got kicked out, and the ones who never went in.
Oh, exactly.
The ones who never went in.
Right, because they knew.
Right.
They knew. Yeah. Well, so again, that's my thing with Kevin Spacey, is that I don't know him definitively to be gay, but I still have this frustration of, you could do so much.
Right.
I think he's a 2-time Academy Award winner, and there's so much that you could do, but I don't like the outing thing, and I know people do that, and sometimes I think maybe I secretly like it because it's, especially people are perpetuating hypocrisy.
Right.
But yeah, I'm very conflicted. I'm obviously very conflicted, but it is sad to me. I would like to put Richard Chamberlain in a box and say, all right, well, you're 79, and that's where this is. Or did I just age him?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, we live in a culture where, you know, there are...
76, I did age, I'm sorry.
You did. There are repercussions for some people, and that's why, you know, we don't out one another. Right. We let people find their own time and their own moment. Did you hear the whole Oprah thing? Did you see the tearful Barbara Walters?
I'm not even kind of a lesbian, which, you know, I just thought was the greatest quote, because I'm kind of a lesbian. So it's funny that Oprah's not
Well, you are a lesbian,
that's
actually.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's been, it's been said. But Oprah's not even kind of one.
Right. But the great thing that she did say was, well, why wouldn't I admit it if I were?
Right.
I mean, I give her a lot of credit for, and that also felt like it was very visceral for her. Like, you know, the problem is not, you know, being a lesbian being bad. It's just that that's not who I am.
Right.
That's how I took what she said.
I still want her to be a lesbian. So there's that.
And then, I still think she is.
And then there you go. Yeah. Yes, you can come back now, Julie.
If you can be a lesbian, Oprah can be a lesbian.
I'm telling you. Now, I will tell everyone that you should go over to the LA Times website, which is latimes.com, and search for the op-ed by Jonah Goldberg. And the op-ed is called As Gay Becomes Bourgeois.
Oh, I read that.
Did you read that?
I read
that. This was yesterday, so we don't have a ton of time to talk about it, but it's fascinating.
What's he call them?
What was it? The hobos.
The hobos, right.
That's so far. Are you a hobo?
I guess I am.
I think I'm definitely a hobo.
Yeah.
A homosexual bourgeois. So very interesting. Do you watch Modern Family?
I do not, but I did not watch that clip, but I'm curious now.
Oh, Modern Family. Are you
Modern
you
Family
TV?
And Glee? Like these very, it's a very red audience, and there are prominent gay characters.
It's
what's with that?
Apparently the biggest Republican show. Are you a TV watcher? Are you one of these people that I have in the chair who?
You know, I actually do watch some TV.
Okay. You own one, which is up from some of the other co-hosts that I have. I love
and I
them
have cable.
All.
Yes.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking.
Like you could come back
I
every
don't live
week.
In Brattleboro, though. I live in Northampton.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. That's okay. So do you know that this is how quick this goes? It actually, we're at
That's
the end
it?
Of our time.
Oh, it's flown by.
I know. It goes very fast.
I
how gay do you
me?
Feel?
I feel so gay.
She was just saying it. You were just about to say, I hope you'll have me back.
I
we
hope
were
you'll
during
have me
the
back.
Song breaks booking Julie for other shows. Anyway, so we hope that you guys, there's always a way to get in touch with us. The number one way is to send us an email at thisshowisogay@AOL.com. Every single email that you send us gets answered. What did you think of Julie? What did you think of her? Do you want to date her? Just send us an email at thisshowisogay@AOL.com. By the way, on your second show, we set you up. It's kind of what we do.
Oh, good. I can't wait.
Yay. So send us an email, thisshowisogay@AOL.com. Troll on over to thisshowisogay.com. And right there on the homepage, you can check out upcoming guests. Booked about two or three guests since you last heard my voice last week. So definitely do that. And as always, go on over to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, and like us. We like when you like us, because we like you.
Aww,
how was that?
That's very
pretty
sweet.
Good. Love you guys. It is the last show of 2010. Thus concludes another year in the record books for This Show Is So Gay. It's been an incredible year. 100 shows we hit this year.
Amazing.
Amy Ray from the Indigo Amy Girls Ray. This year. No, it's been an incredible show. Yeah. So as always, above all else, we thank you, the listeners, because otherwise it's just me in a room. It's me in a room with a rotating, revolving door of lesbians. Are you okay being is that fine?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
It's company I like to keep.
There. Yeah. See? I'm kind of a lesbian. So that's it for us, folks. Have an amazing New Year's. Be safe. Be healthy. Go out there. Educate yourself. And above all else, remember, why be gay when you can be
so gay?
Don't tell me not to live. Just sit and putter. Life's candy and the sun's a ball of butter. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. Fly. I simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Who told you you're allowed to rain on my parade? I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm found out, your turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. I guess I didn't make it, but whether I'm the rose of sheer perfection or freckle on the nose of life's complexion, the cinder or the shiny apple of its eye, I gotta fly once, I gotta try once, only can die once, right, sir? Ooh, life
summer. I simply gotta march, my heart's a drummer. Don't bring around a cloud to rain on my parade. I'm gonna live and live now. Get what I want, I know how. One roll for the whole shebang. Hey, Mr. Armstead, here I am. I'll march my band out. I'll beat my drum. And if I'm fanned up, good turn at bat, sir. At least I didn't fake it, hat, sir. Guess I didn't make it, get...